Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber with Everyone Loves Guitar. I've got a real badass session player, touring musician out of Nashville as our guest today. Nick DeMaria is with us. This is a very busy guy. He's opened up for Florida Georgia Line, Toby Keith, Ronnie Dunn, Willie Nelson, Clint Black, Frankie Ballard, Thompson Square, and loads more. He's got a ton of demo and master and performing credits. Right now he's doing work on tour, and he's doing recordings with Devin Dawson on Warner Brothers. He's also recorded with Jacob Durrett, Jay Joyce, John Paul White from the Civil Wars, Luke Wooten, Fiona Cully. He's done demos for every major publisher in the business and loads of independents, including Starstruck Entertainment, Seagale, and Station West, which is a big one. He also did the debut EP on Red Bow Records, which is a subsidiary of Broken Bow Records, for Brooke Eden. And what's the song, Act Like You Don't, Nick?
Act Like You Don't, that's
the current hit that's going up the charts. Again, he's right now working with Devin Dawson on Warner Brothers in Atlantic with Jay Joyce, who's a very big-time producer up in Nashville. And he has a bunch of cool guitars he plays that we'll talk about that too. So, Nick, I really appreciate you taking the time to come with us on the show today. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Craig. I'm excited to dive on in.
Well, cool. So what are you working on now that you're most excited about? You got a lot of cool stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, you hit a lot of the highlights, man. But yeah, I mean, the most current stuff happening right now is really this stuff happening with Devin. We recorded the album with Jay kind of last, I'm trying to think back now, it was probably kind of, you know, July, and then we kind of finished up a couple of things in September, and they started putting out singles on him earlier this year, and we've got three songs up on Spotify right now, and the first of which got released to radio a few weeks ago, so now, like, that one's climbing up the charts, and we've been on the road.
What song is that?
It's called All On Me.
Okay, yes, I've seen that.
Yeah, so we've been on the road promoting that for probably about 5 months, 4 or 5 months now, doing what's called a radio tour, where we basically go to, I feel like we've been to every state in the friggin' United States, and we just visit radio stations, and we play the music for them live. It's me, Devin, and we have another guitar player named Austin Taylor Smith. And the three of us go around to radio stations, just play them the music, and we get to chat with them a little bit and kind of build a little bit of a rapport around the country with country radio and get them on board with the music. So it's been a very, very busy time. I was kind of telling you a little bit before this, you know, just been for a while, we were on the road for 5 days at a time, maybe 1 or 2 days back in Nashville, 5 days, 6 days, 1 day, 2 days back in Nashville. So very, very busy with that stuff, just flying around everywhere. And then we were on tour with Mara Morris earlier this year on her Hero Tour, which was very fun. We did a performance on Late Night with Seth Meyers as well. What else? I mean, I'm sure there's other stuff in there somewhere. That's kind of the high points, as I kind of told you earlier too. I started getting more into production and recording when I'm not on the road as well. But I've been working a lot with a company called Riser House Entertainment. My friend Kristen, who is awesome, she's their creative director. They've been helping me out a lot. So yeah, man. I mean, that's kind of the cliff notes, I guess, of the past year of my life, pretty much.
Very cool, man. No, you're on fire. So let me ask you this: so you go to which of these things? So you go to, you're on Late Night with Seth Meyers. You're touring around the country. You're up on stage. What thing, was there one of these events that, like, you actually had an, like, you're doing this thing and you're like, holy shit, pinch me. I mean, I can't, I mean, like, you know, 2 years ago I was, or 5 years ago I was in a dorm room playing my guitar and now I'm XYZ. I mean, does it seem surreal at times, or does, like, has any one event, like, happened that you said, wow, this is really, this is real now. This is really happening.
What was- for sure. I mean, it's completely surreal, man. I mean, it's even more surreal because of the fact of, you know, like, I met Devin at Belmont. We both went to school at Belmont University in Nashville. And so, as did most of our band, like, all of the band went to Belmont, but me, our drummer Kip Allen, and our bass player Sam Rodberg were all at Belmont at the same time with Devin, and we all started jamming together. And so now we're all doing, you know, we're all in this together as a group. And I never would have thought that, you know, this is the way, you know, we would have, you know, quote unquote, you know, we're still a lot of work to do, but quote unquote made it.
Sure.
In Nashville. But I guess to answer your question, definitely the first moment where I was like, holy shit, this is crazy, was definitely recording with J.A. Joyce. Mm. Because when you work in the music industry in Nashville, you kind of get used to kind of not getting too excited about things until they actually happen. So that was one of those things for me where, like, you know, Devin signed a publishing deal with Warner Brothers and with a company called Neon Cross, which is Jay's publishing company. And so we recorded an EP for him at Jay's studio, but Jay didn't produce it. It was kind of just like our band kind of doing it ourselves. But, you know, that was one of our things. It was like, man, like, it would be amazing to record with Jay and like do an actual album with him. And so once Devin signed his record deal with Warner Brothers, you know, that started kind of getting tossed around in the conversation. I was like, oh, man, like, that'd still be cool, you know? Like, I don't know if it's going to happen. And then, you know, when, like, Devin and I were talking, you know, we were on the way to a gig, and he was telling me, yeah, no, I think Jay, you know, was really thinking about, you know, having a live band to come in to do the record. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that's incredible. But, you know, that's still in the back of my mind, like, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, I'm not going to get too carried away with it until I'm freaking sitting in the freaking recording chair with a mic in front of my amp cab with all my gear at the studio. And, you know, it was one of those things, you know, everything just kind of kept falling into place. And finally, you know, we were sitting in the studio with Jay Joyce and we do the album. So that was definitely, especially like the first day walking into his studio, was definitely a little bit nerve-wracking. But, you know, I mean, that was like the dream. You know, I listened to stuff that he's produced, you know, in high school, and it was a lot of his music that he produced that got me into country music. And of course, he's gotten a huge rap sheet of rock records as well, and he's started working with a guy named Mickey Echo, who's a pop artist. I mean, he's got a hell of a rap sheet. He's a super talented guy. So that was kind of the first kind of holy shit moment for me, I guess, was getting to record with Jay.
So let me ask this: what, as a musician in the studio and working with a guy like Jay, what do you notice, like, being in the studio with a producer of his caliber? How does that change things versus being in the studio with no producer or just any average Joe producer? Like, how does his game elevate what's going on specifically?
Oh, absolutely. That's a good question. Yeah, I mean, it's tough to, in a lot of ways, it's kind of tough to quantify, but definitely, you know, kind of starting out in Nashville, you know, you kind of start recording with your friends and doing your little projects, and, you know, and there's obviously some really talented people, you know, up and coming, and Jacob is a perfect example of that. Like, we did a lot of work together, and he's a talented producer and a track guy. But one of the things that was definitely different about working with Jay, and like maybe, you know, come to a surprise, is just working in the studio with a live band, like as together as a unit. Like, that's not as common nowadays to do. So most people do kind of like you go into a studio, it's kind of a smaller room, and you kind of build a track kind of one piece at a time. And the vibe of having everything going down at the same time is definitely a different feeling, you know, in and of itself. But as far as like Jay's workflow specifically, you know, I think a good producer just knows how to capture a great performance, you know, at the end of the day. Like, I think that's kind of what one of my big takeaways from him is he just knows how to create that environment, you know, with his, you know, in his studio, with the arrangement of the song, and just the overall like vibe with the band, that creates a good performance that everyone can be really proud of. And like, you know, we would spend, you know, a whole day on one song and, you know, get the perfect live take, and then go back over it and punch things here and there if we didn't, you know, love one thing. But you know, even if there was like a little mistake in one of the things, sometimes he would say, like, oh no, that's like, I love this take, I love the vibe, like, let's stick with it. And but I think that's just it, dude. Like, there's not a whole lot of substitute for just a good performance, and like a good performance with the perfect tone or with the perfect inflection or, you know, nuance, you know, on the guitar, that maybe you did it on purpose or maybe you didn't, you know, but it doesn't really matter.
Sure.
And then, because one of the big moments for me when we recorded was we did a song called Symptoms, which is going to be on the record. I think it's coming out in October. And I had done the demo for the song with another producer in town here. And it's got this kind of like auto wah effect on like my main part on the song. And so
auto wah?
Like auto wah. Yes, or like envelope filter. Okay. Or, you know, I don't know. It has a few different names. But it's basically, the effect is it's a equalizer filter that filters all of the high end off of the guitar, and then as you pluck harder, as you play harder on the guitar, the filter opens. So it's, you know, it's how a wah works. So okay. It kind of makes a womp 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 effect. If you know the song I Don't Trust Myself Loving You by John Mayer, it's an auto wah like that.
Okay.
So that's what I normally did, like kind of throughout the song, and that's what I did, you know, on the main rhythm for the song when we recorded it with Jay. But then it came time to do the solo, and you know, I played the rhythm part down twice, and we came to do the solo, and Jay said, "Okay, well, you know, what do you normally do here?" And I was like, well, I have the same effect on. I just kind of normally just hit it a little harder so the filter opens up a little bit more. And he was like, "Well, why don't you just turn that off for a second and just see what happens, you know?" And I was like, "Shoot, you know, okay." And then I normally played my telly for that part, but I was just like, "You know, I'm gonna pick up the Strat and just try something." So I had my whammy bar on the Strat, and then I played one take of the solo, and he was like, "Yeah, I mean, that was pretty good. Like, do you want to use that?" And I was like, "I mean, yeah, I honestly don't think it's gonna get any better than that." Like, it was just one of those things. Like, he just said, like, "You know what, just try something, and just do it. And it worked, you know, it was, cool. You know, not a lot of people kind of think about, using pressure like that just to say like, you know what, throw away what you thought you throw away what you normally do in this song and just do something completely different.
Which is intimidating, and, I guess, to a certain extent, isn't it?
Oh, it's definitely intimidating. And, sure. You know, I mean, it's. You know, to a certain extent, it is. It's kind of the purest form of just like trusting, you know, yourself, or just trusting the gear, and just having the ability to say, you know, fuck it, I'm just gonna try something different. And you know, we tried it a few times. Sometimes it didn't work, but you know, it did work a few times. And in those few times that it does work, you're just like, wow, like that was. So satisfying, and like it feels so pure. And it's like in those moments, if you're really just kind of like not thinking about it, sometimes those can be the things that really shine through in a recording, and those can be your most proud moments, you know. So it's just such a beautiful like allegory, I guess, even for life, you know, just kind of having that,
yeah, man,
experience. So yeah, man. I mean, it was an incredible experience, but those little things like that, I think, definitely separate, you know, a real like seasoned producer like Jay as opposed to maybe a less experienced producer, for sure.
So, people, guys listening, just so you know, Jay's worked with the Wallflowers. He's produced CDs for the Wallflowers, Emmylou Harris, Cage the Elephant, and Zach Brown Band, just to name a few. And he's actually played guitar for Crowded House, Wallflowers, John Hiatt. And here's an interesting one, Iggy Pop.
Oh, yeah.
That's an eclectic mix. Hey, I'm going to pause 1 second because I have a 14-year-old dog, and it's thundering here in Tampa, and she's gonna tear my door down if I don't let her in. Hang on.
Come here, sweetie.
Sorry, man. That's always Aaron. It always either like when usually when I'm doing interviews, my landscape guy shows up or it starts pouring and my dog, you know, and my wife's not around and the dog starts freaking out. Come here, sweetie.
Oh, dude, you're good, man. Like, dogs have a sixth sense about those kind of things.
Oh. So let me ask you a question. You grew up in the Bay Area, out in San Francisco. Was playing guitar like always on your radar screen? Like, when did you know, and how did that come about that, hey, I'd like to be a professional musician, or I'd like to give this a shot?
You know, when I was a kid growing up, you know, I was always kind of like looking for that thing to do, I guess, you know, or like, you know, just looking for like a hobby, or just looking for something to be passionate about, I guess. So, you know, I went through all kinds of phases when I was like a really young kid. Like, I had a friend that did like these, they were called Warhammer, fucking like plastic figurines, and it was like a whole board game associated with it, and you'd like have to paint the figure and everything. So I was like, I'll try anything, you know. So like, I have one thing that I did, and so, you know, I don't know, but music was kind of always in the background for me, and like even through all that stuff, because my dad was kind of a recreational musician, and he had one of his dreams was to get a Les Paul and a Marshall amp. And he finally, like in 1999, the company that he worked for at the time went public. And so he said, you know, I'm going to go out. This is it. I'm going to go out and do it. So, you know, and I was, what, 6 at the time. So that was always kind of around when I was a kid. And I also had a friend who was a really great drummer as you know, in kindergarten or first grade, so I was always kind of like jamming on his drum kit. So one day it kind of just dawned on me, like I've been doing all this other stuff, but the one thing I've kind of stuck around with was with music. So I actually really wanted to be a drummer. So you know, I begged my parents to, you know, to get me a drum set, and you know, they're like most normal parents, they said no, or hell no, we're not giving you a freaking drum set. We don't want to have to re-listen to that. So again, it was kind of just out of, you know, stupidity on my part, just like, you know what, this is around, this is right here, and I've always been tinkering with it, maybe I should just take it more seriously. And it was probably about, oh man, maybe around like 10 or 11 years old when I really kind of started to take it seriously. And it kind of just took off from there, man. I mean, I did, you know, the talent show when I was in middle school, and then did the jazz band in high school, and it just kind of kept snowballing. And then kind of at some point I kind of connected the dots and I said, like, hey, you know what, I might want to just, you know, try doing this thing. And then of course, you know, I read about Nashville and the fact that there was a music industry here, and I was like, oh my gosh, like I didn't even really, you know, think about that or know that that really even existed. So, you know, started doing some research on that, and then that was, the rest is history, I guess.
Do you still have your, and this was all taking place on your dad's Les Paul?
Yes.
What kind of Les Paul was it?
It was a, it's from 1999, it was a Gibson Les Paul Classic in Sunburst. It actually looks a lot like the guitar you had hanging right behind
that,
you.
You know, I was just going to say that, man. Yeah, that's a classic. That's exactly what that is.
Is that a classic? So, oh,
yeah,
my
God. Yeah. It's a
that's
great.
That's something.
Yeah, it has like four the hot pickups. I don't know if they did that in 99. I think they did because they always had the hotter pickups on the Classic. It's like a 490 and a 498T or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Well, it's like, do you have the gloss finish on yours too?
It is glossy. Yes, it's like a T-burst glossy. And I think that's like a 2005 or something like that. So it's probably not far off from that guitar your dad has. That's really
yes.
funny, and it's got a real that's thin neck. I mean, you know, I'm not, I don't have really big hands, so I love playing it.
Mm-hmm.
Was your dad's that have a thin neck as well, or was it like an old style thick chunky neck?
I mean, I didn't obviously. I mean, he still has it, but I couldn't tell you necessarily specifically. But it's good though, because I remember after a while Gibson decided to do, like, I don't even know, it wasn't even like a matte finish necessarily, it was like they kind of like stained it sunburst, and it was the grossest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. But that's what they eventually did to the Classic. I was just like, why did they freaking do this? And so I always kind of cherished those, you know, Les Paul Classics before they ruined them with whatever that stain was. But and I guess, you know, and I realized of course later too that that's like the Slash guitar too, you know, the Tobacco Summers with the no pickup covers. So it's a great guitar, man. I love that thing even to this day. I think it's a great guitar.
Yeah, it is. I won't sell this one. I mean, I have another one that I have actually up for sale. It's a Standard, and it's a nice sounding guitar, but I don't play it as much as I like this Classic. That's a keeper, man. So, I mean,
is yours ridiculously heavy?
No, mine is chambered.
It's chambered.
Yeah. So it's not heavy at all. You know,
it's might have been one of the modifications that they made, because that was the one thing about that guitar is, I mean, even now, it is. That's got to be like an 11, 12 pound guitar. It's a brick.
Yeah, you know. But, I always wondered, like, you know, when I grew up in the, you know, 70s, let's say, and I was really into music, you know, the typical aesthetic of a band is, you know, a guy that's like Joe Perry size. He's really thin, really shredded. And I never knew how these guys were. And everyone was like that. You know, they'd be walking around with these massive, heavy Les Pauls, and I was like, wow, that is really just in and of itself pretty talented.
Oh dude, they're just doing cocaine and not eating, man. That's the,
I guess that's the secret,
that's the
formula
for the physique, at least. That'll, I don't know about the strength for carrying around a freaking Les Paul with all that, but
That'll be one of the bullets for this, the teaser copy for this show, how doing cocaine and not eating helps you in your guitar.
That's how you become a rock star, right? You do cocaine and you don't eat.
There you go.
Yeah, that's the lesson, kids.
Well, that's funny that you have that your dad has that guitar. Who are the biggest? So how did you get into country? Because I know it wasn't hanging out in the Bay Area, listening to what they're playing there.
No, it was not. I had a guitar teacher at the time who was obsessed with Brad Paisley. And he would say, you know, every single lesson I ever went with him, he said, dude, you've got to listen to Brad Paisley. He's like the best guitar player in the world right now. He's so incredible. And of course, I was like, yeah, like, that's cool. Like country music, you know, whatever. And one day I was just watching TV and I went into the kitchen to, you know, grab a sandwich or something. And I heard a song come on a commercial on the TV from the other room. And I was like, hey, that guitar sounds pretty good. I wonder what that is. And I walk in the room and it's Brad Paisley on a freaking Hershey's commercial.
Ah, so the universe was telling you, hitting home that message.
Yes. So
awesome.
Hershey's did well on their market. I guess so did Brad Paisley on that commercial. And so that was kind of it. And so I just kind of started with Brad Paisley and I just got super into his music. And then I really got into like Dierks Bentley and like Sarah Evans and trying to think of what else. Those are kind of the ones. And Eric Church too, like, you know, with Jay. Yeah, I mean, that was kind of it though. And that's funny actually, because that's also how I found out about Belmont. It was through the fact that Brad Paisley went to Belmont.
Oh, yes. So,
as I did digging on him, and then I was like, oh, this is Nashville, Belmont University. Oh, this is so cool. It's just worth checking it out. So
very cool.
Brad Paisley is the reason why I'm in Nashville and the reason for pretty much everything in my life. So
well, sometimes
thanks, Brad.
When things are meant to be, they just happen like that, man. That's just the way they unfold, I think. Let's talk about some of your guitars. So what's a Highway 1? You have a Fender Highway 1 Telecaster. What is a Highway 1? What's different about that model?
Yes. The Highway 1s are kind of funky. I don't feel like they made them for very long. They're American made, but I don't really know what kind of got into Fender's head to make this thing, because it's a matte finish guitar. Mm-hmm. And the necks on them are really, really amazing. They're really skinny and the frets are enormous. And I think like the pickups and stuff were kind of average, but they were really cheap. They were, I think when they were new, they were like $700 or $800 brand new. And so they were the cheapest American made Fender guitar you could buy. And everyone that I've talked to about them has said the same thing, that there's just something really cool about them, like really magical, and they play really well. And the bodies on them, I guess, because of the matte finish, just feel really resonant. And so I've kind of Frankenstein mine over the years. I took out the pickups, and I think I've got a Texas Special neck pickup. Mm-hmm. And then I think DiMarzio, believe it or not, something in the bridge. I can't remember what it is, but that's a cool pickup, man. It's a rocking little bridge pickup. And then
is that an active pickup?
No, okay. It's still a passive pickup, but I think it's called a True Velvet, DiMarzio True Velvet pickup. Which I don't even know if they make those anymore either, but they'd have a really, really cool kind of full sound, and they're still pretty twangy, so yeah, good job. And then I did the four-way switch also for the pickups, so you got the bridge, and then both pickups in series, both pickups in parallel, and the neck.
Very cool. So here's something really funny. If you look up Fender Highway 1, right? And this was just the perfect point to show you that opinions are like assholes. and you need to actually go play a guitar. So here you are, a professional touring musician. Your career is about to go on fire, and you're doing really well. So I look on some forum. Man, am I glad Fender is scrapping. This was in 2010, the Highway 1 Strat. What a low-end pile of junk. I am a gigging musician and play hundreds of shows a year. The fretwork was horrible. I cut my fingers and had to file them down. I don't know if you're talking about his fingers or the frets. Then in the middle of a gig, I mean, it's just so funny because this is the danger. I mean, look, having information and access to information is great. But here you said, you know, it's a magical, that was your words, it's a magical instrument. And it obviously, I mean, you didn't just make it up because you feel like it's a magical instrument. You've played really well with this.
Hold on. Come here, sweetie. My dog is freaking out.
She needs a Xanax or something. And here you are tearing up, recordings with major producers, and this guy online is so this is so individual, man. That's why, so
perfect. And I think that's what I always say when people ask me about gear. I'm like, I have what I like, and maybe that guy like friggin' just hates the feeling of the Highway 1 Telecaster. Maybe the one that he got was shitty. Like, I don't know, but
yeah, which is a very good possibility with any guitar and any brand, any make. There's are some lemons, you know.
Oh yeah, and I mean, I've kind of reached the point now where like I'm so particular about like what I like, and I'm more about the feel of the guitar because you can always like switch out a pickup. Like that's easy enough to do to kind of modify the sound of it a little bit, but the bass component of the sound of the guitar and just the playability of the guitar is just like, how does it friggin' feel when you hold it in your hands, when you strum a chord, when you play some notes, that's when you really start to, at least, if you're really like, passionate about guitar and like, that's what you want. You're gonna want to feel that, that good feeling of playing a good guitar that like fits for you. So, and everybody likes something different, but I mean, I've played, vintage $40,000, $50,000 guitars that I thought were the shittiest instruments in the world. And, not everybody wants to hear that, but it's just like, it's just a fact. Like just because something has a $40,000 price tag on it doesn't mean that it's something that you want to buy. Like realistically, like you can't get wrapped up in like, oh, this is the best guitar because it costs this much or it has this, this body or this bridge. It's like, what if you just played it and thought it was awesome, but then just because it has one thing, that's your holy crap.
Totally, man. It's very subjective. And you know what? Was that a vintage guitar, 40 or 50 grand? Or is that like a modern guitar?
Vintage.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, that's not a guitar designed to play anywhere. I mean, you're not going to take that out of your living room or that'd be crazy. That's something to hang on a wall or something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, if that's what you're looking for, if you're a rich dude looking for a wall hanging, I guess maybe that's cool. But I've also played some vintage instruments where, like maybe they are like up in the high tens of thousands of dollars, and they do have like a certain mojo, and you think like, wow, like I don't think there's any other instrument that plays like this. Like this is definitely something that is unique and something that I can't find in a normal, a newer guitar or in a cheaper guitar. And those are the ones to hang on to. But there's so much passion and kind of gusto in the gear community. People get attached to, an idea of X and Y. But I'm all about just how does it feel to you, or like how does it feel to the player and how does it sound? Because some things sound great when someone else plays them, but they don't sound good when I play them, or vice versa,
I think people also make a mistake if they see a price tag and like let's say it's a $10,000 guitar versus a $10,000 Strat versus a $1,000 Strat, and I think people, well, does it play 10 times better? That's not how you evaluate things. You can't say, you know, does a $50,000 car drive 5 times better than a 10, or there's no $10,000 cars, but does a $50,000 car drive twice, is it twice the car of a $25,000 car? I don't think you could evaluate certain things with relative, you know, relative comparisons. I think certain things, there's a market price, and it is what it is. If you like it, buy it. If you don't. But I don't think, you know, is a $20 cigar twice as good or four times as good as a $5 cigar? I don't know. It's kind of, you know.
Hang
on, man. I'm sorry. This dog is totally
ripping up my studio. Hang on.
Oh, my God. Stella, you're so mental. Holy smokes. Sorry, man. She's just like freaking out here. Usually my wife's around, so she like keeps her, but she's just going nuts. Stella, stop. Holy smokes.
Stella.
Sorry, man. She's 14 and, you know, she's kind of losing it a little bit, and she gets so super anxious and like all her hair's falling out. Anyway, sorry.
Okay, let's talk about your 335, because I know you love that instrument. Share, if you will, what you feel the core differences are, both in sonically and in playability, between a hollow body 335 and a solid body guitar like a Strat or a Tele or a Gibson Les Paul or.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's definitely night and day. And I mean, of course the 335 is a semi hollow guitar, which means that it has basically just a board of wood down the middle of it. Which actually, again, little known fact, I don't know if you know this already, but that was the initial design of the solid body guitar that Les Paul created, was a semi-hollow guitar with a board of wood down the center. But it is, I'd say, the biggest difference between kind of a semi-hollow and a solid body is definitely the kind of the resonance and kind of the ring. It's kind of hard to describe, again, like I'm such an ethereal kind of, you know, I guess, I don't know, it's the artist in me coming out, but you can kind of tell, you know, it's like when you feel the guitar vibrate, it's like if you're playing with the amp in the room, you know, with a hollow body guitar, you know, you can feel the resonance from the amp, you know, resonating through the strings and through the body of the guitar, and that's why hollow body guitars feed back so much more easily than a solid body guitar does, and that translates even in a low volume. So, you know, it definitely just has kind of like a woody, almost, I think, quality to it. If you can just kind of, the strings just sound like, not dead necessarily, but I don't know. It's again, I'm being super ethereal, but like woody is always how I feel when I play the 335. It just feels like, you know, you're in the freaking wilderness, like being a lumberjack chopping down wood. Like, it just feels so much more like organic to me.
No, I totally get it, because I like that. It's a very warm, round sound. I love that. I love the 330. What kind of pickups do you have in there? Are they stock pickups?
They're the stock pickups. I think they're 57 Classics.
Oh, my God. Those are awesome pickups.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit. I have an SG that I'm actually selling, but the only reason I almost didn't sell is because of those pickups. They're phenomenal. Just wonderful pickups, man.
That's the sound. The Gibson sound that you think of in your head, that's a 57 Classic.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. Do you ever heard familiar with Freddie King?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he played a 340, a 345, I think, which was basically a 355 with a like a tuner switch.
Yeah.
He's when I think 335, and when I think Gibson sound, I think of him because he was. You mentioned used that word pure earlier. He was I found a very pure player. You know, the sonically, and it was a joy to listen to him play. You know, and like Albert King was the same, very pure.
Oh.
You know, he plugged into a Flying V, which is kind of weird, but. Well, it's just a hard guitar to play, let alone, you know, you see this 6'5" giant black dude coming on stage with a heavy metal guitar and he's just slicing the blues apart. So it was awesome.
Oh, dude. And again, I mean, kind of going back to just the individual kind of preference kind of thing, you know, like everyone's got their thing that they like and it might seem weird, like on the outside, but like it's perfect for that person. There's a session guy here in town named Derek Wells. Mm. And he's kind of like, he's a younger guy, but he's all over the country or all over country radio right now. He's done like Chris Young stuff and like Carrie Underwood, Thomas Rhett, like a bunch of the big records now. But one of the main guitars that he uses in the studio is a Gibson Explorer, like from 1982.
that's even stranger in country. Wow!
Right? And he posted, I remember on Instagram a little while ago, kind of jokingly, just like a picture of that guitar, and he was just like, "If everybody knew that this guitar was going on their records, I feel like I would never get hired on anything."
That's probably accurate, actually. That's so
yeah.
funny. That's
so
amazing.
It's like, you don't question it, you know, like it just sounds good and it just feels good and you hear it and you go, yeah, like that sounds perfect, like that sounds like just like what it needs. Oh, what was it? Oh, it was a Gibson Explorer. Oh, what is it? Why does that change what it sounds like? Yeah. It sounds awesome, you know.
So
it's kind of funny though.
Musically dude, this is a zoo here. Now I got a cat walking around here. This is out of control. who are some of your influences?
Well, definitely Brad Paisley. Like I said, he was kind of the first country guitar player that I ever got into that I really thought was awesome. But I mean, growing up, I had a lot of the same kind of phases that everybody goes through, you know, Jimi Hendrix and Stevie Ray Vaughan. Those are like probably my two big ones. And then I did Brad Paisley. And then once I really started getting into country, you know, you kind of start to learn about the session scene here in town. You start to learn about all the guys playing on all the records. And so I really started getting into that when I moved here. And, you know, you're talking about Kenny Greenberg and Jeremy McPherson. Oh, yeah. You know, great, great players.
Sure.
One of my favorite, though, is probably a guy named JT Kornfloss. And I know Jim is a big as well.
Sure. He played we listened to we were talking about, there's an old song, Mrs. Robinson by Simon and Garfunkel. You've probably heard it, or you may have heard it. Anyway, it was a pretty famous song, and JT Kornfloss did a version of it, and it was really cool because it was just like all double stops. He was playing and bending. You know, he's such a good player, bending the notes, and it was awesome, man.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've always loved his style. Like, he's just got, of all of the session guitarists, I think here in town, he's got the most, like, raw, it's like kind of, he's amazing, but it's like this kind of gritty, kind of dirty sound, but at the same time he's so precise and he's just as tight, you know, as all the other guys, you know, timing wise and, you know, playing, you know, clarity wise, you know, clarity of the notes he plays. But there's just something about him when you see him play, like, you know, he's strums the guitar, you know, super hard, and he plucks really hard, and, you know, he's just got so much swagger, I feel like, in his playing. And he's, you know, you wouldn't think that when you saw him. You know, he's a skinny guy, but And he's, you know, he's, I've never met him. So, I mean, JT, if you're listening to this, but, you know, I mean, I've just always had so much respect for him. And, you know, like, he's got, you know, he may not be, you know, the most, you know, socially outgoing guy in the world, but I've heard he's a freaking gem of a guy. And he just, when he picks up a guitar, like, he's a freaking badass, you know, and he just sounds like a rock and roll country machine, you know. So, love JT. Really hope to meet him someday.
Just for people listening, that's JT Cornfloss. It's JT, letter J, letter T, and it's Cornfloss, Cornfloss. So check him out online. He's got an excellent player.
If you've listened to country music in the past 20 years, you've probably heard him play out.
Whether you know it or not. It's funny you talk about that he's a slight, you know, slight build guy. What I find really strange is when you see guys that are drummers like that.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, I don't know if you know Government Mule.
Yeah.
So I've seen them like I think 4 or 5 times. Matt Apps is one of the hardest hitting drummers around. He's a very hard hitting drummer, and he gets off the drum kit. Honestly, he's probably 5'3", 135 pounds. I'm amazed that he's really a hard hitting drummer, and he's an excellent, outstanding drummer. And I just assumed when he got up, I was going to see this massive hunk of a man, and he was just a regular, slight built guy. So I mean, just, you know, energy and passion, man, takes you pretty damn far.
Oh, I mean, and it's amazing kind of how we formulate an idea about people or musicians particularly based on what we hear of how they play. And it's interesting to see how those things are reflected in them as people, you know. And it's I almost feel like it's kind of like you get to kind of see inside a little bit of a person when you see like a really good musician, you kind of get to peek inside a little bit of who they are, like who they really are as people, or who they aspire to be, you know, or who they truly are, you know. So it's really cool, and I think that's one of the reasons why music is such a magical thing for people, and people get so into it, is because it's such a visceral thing, and you make those like assumptions in your head. You hear a drummer and you think like, oh man, he sounds like such a you know, big guy, or like this song like just sounds like so heart-wrenching, like, and I picture this lead singer, you know, like in a field somewhere, you know, like, or like in the rain, you know, and you build these ideas in your head, and there's nothing else that can kind of evoke those things like music can. So
I agree with you. And I think in general, sounds create a certain image, because I know, like in business, I have spoken to people, you know, my whole career on the phone, and I have an image of them. And literally 100% of the time, it is always wrong. They never, ever, ever look like what my vision of, and it happens, like everybody always says to me, I'm 5'9". The first thing people say, oh, I thought you were a taller guy, because I got a lot of energy, and, you know, I'm sort of passionate about stuff. And so it's literally been wrong 100% of the time in my life, you know, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Music's just an extension of that. Exactly.
Hey, we're going to wrap up soon. I just want to ask you one or two more questions. Sure. And I appreciate so much of your time. Favorite place you've traveled and why?
Man, you know, especially, you know, if I'm on the spot right now, I would definitely have to say, just in the past year, I'd have to say New York City.
There you go. Yes.
Yeah, man. So
rock and roll.
You definitely take the cake on that one. I mean, I had never been until this year. I had just been for the first time in February, and we've been back probably 6 or 7 times since that first hit. And it's just so amazing to me that you can go to New York City, and like we've stayed in a different hotel every time. And, you know, we're in like a new, slightly new area of town. So, like, you know, we see new things. And even though we're staying like only a few blocks away from where we stayed last time, and you know, now we're kind of starting to get to the point where like we kind of recognize some things and we're getting to know the area a little bit better. But even then, like we've only stayed in Lower Manhattan. Like I've never been north of Central Park ever. So like there's just like this whole other area of New York that I've just never experienced before.
Where'd you play in the city?
We played the last time we played at a place called Printer's Alley.
What's it called?
Printer's Alley. It was just like a little radio kind of sponsored event, and was mm-hmm. me. It was kind of the radio configuration too. It was so me, Devin, and the other guitarist.
Yeah, okay. That's a Nashville. It's a country bar right in Times Square. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And the time before that, as I said earlier, we played on Late Night with Seth Meyers at 30 Rock.
Very cool. Did you like – it must be eye-opening for someone coming to the city to see Rockefeller Center for the first time. If you had a chance to see it, did you go walk around and see the ice skating rink and the statue?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just a little bit. We you know, we have kind of a varying amount of free time every time we go. But we had a little bit of time when we were out there playing with Seth. So we got to check it out a little bit. And it's a beautiful building and so much history in there. And, you know, obviously like there's Saturday Night Live was in the studio right next to us. And like, we were going to go and check it out, but it never ended up materializing. But it's, you know, there's so much kind of entertainment mojo in that building. And then obviously, you know, like you said, the skating rink and Fifth Avenue, you know, right down the street. What is it,
St. Patrick's Cathedral?
St. Patrick's Cathedral. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's breathtaking. It really is. It really is. Well, next time you go, man, make sure you hit me up before you go. I'll give you some places to go where you don't have to spend $50 for breakfast or lunch.
Dude, that sounds really good.
I'll give you the inside hookups.
Dude, yeah, seriously, I will probably hit you up about that.
No, seriously, I mean that. Hit me up, and I'll be happy to do that because there's no reason that you should, you know, I could tell you some cool places to go based on where you're at, you know, that, you know, it may not be too far.
That sounds good.
One last question before we go. Do you have any kind of either cool or goofy or just like a ridiculous story to tell or to share from touring?
Yeah, I was trying to think about this. I'll tell this story with a disclaimer. It contains
the proverbial disclaimer. Go ahead.
It contains nudity, but not in the sense that you would think. But
don't worry, no one here has seen nudity, so this will be eye opening for everybody.
No one knows what nudity looks like. So, but it's just, I wanted to do the disclaimer. So we were on the road with Merritt Morris earlier this year. And we did a few little runs. We kind of started. We did a show in Knoxville, and then we did a little run up north, like in Ohio and Illinois, and then we did a run in Texas. And when we were up north, we did a show in I think it was Champaign, Illinois. You're on your thing. I gotta look this up too.
Champaign, Illinois is a city.
It's a city, but we played at a place called Boondocks.
Okay.
And I had actually played there before with another artist. And is this it? No, it's not Utah. I mean, yeah, I guess it's not super important. It's Boondocks in Illinois. You can look it up.
It is but, in Central so, Illinois.
Central Illinois. There you go. So we're there playing with Marin. And it was kind of like we had been, you know, going pretty hard for the past few days. So we kind of decided like, yeah, you know, maybe this is like one of the shows where we can kind of, you know, lay a little lower, you know, just kind of chill and oh, how plans change. But so we played our set and, you know, we're laying low. We were kind of hanging out on the bus. We had seen Marin's set a few times by that point. So we were kind of just watching TV in the bus. And but after the shows, we like to go out and kind of mingle with the crowd a little bit. So we started kind of hanging around a little bit. And there are like a good number of people had left by this point. But there's still a few people kind of left straggling. And there was this one lady who was left, and I remember her from the last time that I had played there with somebody else. And so, so she starts talking to me, and like, oh my God, you guys are so good, and like, just like, would not like leave any of us alone. And so eventually, you know, we get to the point where she's like, oh, can you, you know, I'd love to get an autograph from you guys. And we were like, okay, yeah, sure, that's fine. And so without skipping a beat, she pulls her shirt down.
Doesn't everybody get autographs on their boobs?
Oh, well, that's what she said. She said, you're going to sign right here. And I was like, oh boy. And, you know, she was a bit of a larger, you know, older woman. Mm-hmm. We're all there kind of like, oh man, okay, like, I guess we're doing this. So we all like get a Sharpie and are like signing like as far like kind of above you know, the nipple area as we can, like just trying to keep it kosher. And of course the whole time we have a photographer that tours with us, and she's like all there like snapping from every angle, like getting our like facial expressions as we're doing this. And so that was probably one of the crazier things that has happened.
And your mom calls you the next morning and says, are you okay, honey? How was your trip to Illinois?
Yeah, like,
no, I hope nothing nothing crazy.
Yeah, so that was interesting. I was like, I didn't think that happened at country shows. I thought that was only at rock and roll shows or
there you go, man.
I guess country is the new rock and roll.
No, man, it's just about what you've been saying. It's about how you guys made her feel.
Oh yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, it was very nice. And I mean, it's cool when you know when fans you know are excited and wanna chat and are into the music and everything, but still get some interesting happenings for sure. So
very cool. That was a good story. Well, Nick, listen, I really I can't thank you enough for your time. I would love to have you come back on this show in 18 months to 2 years because you'll have, I mean, I know you'll be, you know, further up the curve, and it'll be real exciting to see, you know, all the different stuff you're doing. I know you're very involved now in production and doing demos and being a track guy. So if anybody's interested in learning more about Nick, go to his website. It's Nick DiMaria, NickDiMaria music. Music, MUSIC.com. NickDiMariaMusic.com. Check Nick out on Devin Dawson's recordings. I'm sure you. When's the next time you hit the road for that? I know you're doing your radio stuff, but are you doing a proper tour soon with Devin?
There's a lot of stuff kind of in the works right now. We'll be opening next week in Memphis for Little Big Town. And then at the end of July, we'll be on tour with Tim McGraw on the West Coast.
Oh, wow, that's fun.
Soul World Tour. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Very cool. All right, Nick DiMaria, thank you very much for your time. Everybody, check Nick out. He's a really cool guy. I really love your energy, man, your sincerity and your enthusiasm. And I thank you so much for sharing everything with us. And I will look forward to speaking with you then. Until then, everybody, thanks for listening. And everybody go out and support Nick and everything he's doing. Take care, guys.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Hey, thanks very much for listening. You can sign up to get notified of future episodes on our website at everyonelovesguitar.com. Now go play your guitar and have fun. Till next time, I'm out. Peace. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.